Improving discipline with a nurtured heart and protesting healthcare with a hunger strike. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slacker. Here's what's trending in education news.
Well, here's something that's trending on education news. Stick is back as my co-host. Welcome, man.
Thanks. I'm back. Yay.
Are you ready this time?
I'm ready. Yeah. Okay. I ate my M&Ms.
All right. So from the Journal Sentinel.
Yep.
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Governor Scott Walker hints at state action on Milwaukee public schools. Says it might be time to, quote, shake things up.
What does shake things up mean?
Well, that's code for we're going to take over the school district. The state of Wisconsin is going to take over the school district of Milwaukee. The first question people might ask is why?
Yeah, I want to know why. And then also, has it ever been done before in a different state that we can look at it and go, oh, yeah, that worked?
How dare you ask that question? Because why would we want to look at past evidence before making a decision? That would require critical thought.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So the answer, let's go first there.
Sure.
Yes, states have tried to take over school districts and have failed miserably.
Oh, well, that's not good.
That's not good. But no. For some reason, we're going to be different this time, I guess, because we're not going to just totally take things out. We're going to shake things up. And maybe that's a little bit different. I don't know. No, it's never worked before. And in fact, states have no business taking over locally controlled schools that have school boards that are picked by the people that live in that district. In fact, that's an affront to the democratic process at the most local level.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Okay, so the people of Milwaukee do not want Governor Walker coming in and saying, you now have no say over how your schools run.
It doesn't seem right.
It doesn't seem very democratic.
No.
And from a Republican who touts local control as part of their platform, not, again, something that ranks up there very high. Okay. Mm-hmm. Why do they do it, though? They will typically say that they are doing this to increase efficiencies, test scores are bad. It's a failing school district and somebody has to do something. So Walker's going to shake things up. What has happened in every other city where this is that this is a way to continue to reduce funding to the school district in the name of efficiency, increase class sizes, put on more rigorous standards. And at the end of the day, you actually are defunding the biggest school system in the state of Wisconsin through what is called state takeover.
Oh, okay.
All right. Milwaukee already has a problem.
I did read a little bit about them having financial issues.
Right. In fact, their financial issues are so tough. If you read deeply into this article, you'll see that there is a substitute teacher who works full time, just to put this out there, full time, who's on a hunger strike
right now.
Yeah.
Time out. There's a substitute teacher on a hunger strike.
Hunger strike for healthcare. Hunger strike for healthcare.
It doesn't seem right.
Well, it's... What, not having healthcare or the hunger strike or both?
Both.
Well, this is the extremes that people are going to go to. So while Walker's going to, quote, shake things up, we've got actually a teacher by the name of Alex Brower on a hunger strike. And just for the listener of Busted Pencils, we're going to actually talk to Alex. Welcome to the show, Alex Brower.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, it's not a problem. So check this out. We're doing the news here, and we're reading about, you know, the fact that Governor Walker here has been taking a lot of hits at MPS, and in fact, even recently suggesting again some kind of state takeover. But you have more of an issue with the actual budget of Milwaukee Public Schools. So why the hunger strike?
Yeah. Yeah, and so what's happening right now is, it's a very MPS-specific issue, although there are subs across this country and throughout Wisconsin. There are substitute teachers who work full-time but aren't treated with the respect that we deserve or treated like regular employees. Mm-hmm. You know, I come into work, I go into a classroom every day. Sometimes I'm in vacancies, so I'm in the same classroom for a longer period until a teacher is hired, or sometimes I just go from school to school each day. But either way, whatever I do, I am working every single day for this district. And in some small rural districts, they don't have anybody like that. They're all part-time. But in a district like Milwaukee, we've got hundreds of substitute teachers who work full-time for the district and who are filling in daily vacancies or filling in long-term vacancies. And right now, substitute teachers who work for MPS, no matter how much they work, do not receive a health care benefit from the school district.
Okay, I was going to ask that question. I mean, I think a lot of people, when they hear substitute teacher and health care benefits, you know, people are saying, well, it's a substitute job. You go in once a week, you walk out. But when you're talking about Milwaukee here, I think this is not necessarily a contradiction, but the difference is that there's a full onload, you know, or a whole load of you that are working every single day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's more vacancies that occur every day in Milwaukee Public Schools, whether it's daily or long-term vacancies, than they have substitutes to fill. So there is a substitute shortage too, and that's, you know, part of the union's answer to this substitute teacher shortage is for MPS to offer a health care benefit to substitute teachers to work full-time. And our union's demand is that everybody who commits to working at least 32 hours a week receives a health care benefit from the district, which is the same standard that the district applies to paraprofessional or teacher's aides. And right now.
So. Right. I was going to say, I mean, we have standards for when people are considered, quote, full time. And when they're full time, there are benefits. And so you easily meet that standard if you're working every single day as a substitute. So on this issue of civil disobedience that mm-hmm. you're taking here with the hunger strike, I mean, how many days is it now?
Today is day 12.
How are you feeling?
Very hungry. And that sounds so cliche when I say
right.
that. But I, you know, I'm here at the Union Hall right now for Milwaukee teachers, and there's a carrot cake in the lounge, and it's tempting me in a big way. But I'm staying resolved. You know, I am more tired than I was when I started the hunger strike. You know, I have had, you know, I do have hunger pangs that can get pretty severe,
right.
You know, but it's nothing compared to the suffering that substitute teachers who work full time for this district are going through without health care benefits. I know personally of at least two subs who are on the verge of declaring bankruptcy because they have medical bills that are just, and that's my advice to them, Thomas, to just say, I said to both of them, I said, declare bankruptcy, just do it. You know, the district doesn't respect you. You need a way to shed that medical debt, you know, in a way that's not going to cause you to live on the street. Because when you come into the classroom, we need you to be showered and ready and not just having woken up behind a dumpster. So we need subs that are going to come into the classroom and not have this worry of like, well, how am I going to get, you know, to pay these medical bills, or how am I going to see a doctor? We had another sub who had an infected tooth. This was a story reported in the Journal Sentinel, and this is a union member of ours who had an infected tooth, and he had to pull his own tooth out by hand. Mm. Because there is no way that he could go to the dentist. Now, this is an individual who has made a strong commitment to our kids. He's been a sub for almost a decade, I believe, and he subs almost every day at the same high school in Milwaukee. So he's building relationships. He's doing everything that we expect a permanently placed teacher to do and more, because there's a whole different skill set with being a sub. And he's doing all the right things and doing what's needed to help our kids succeed. But for some reason, the district has us in some sort of classification where they will not give us health insurance benefits.
Well, how far, I mean, are you willing to go? Have you had any, you know, anybody from MPS talking about negotiating this? I mean, where are we at? What are you willing to do?
Yeah, well, I'm willing to go as far as it takes. I mean, and I say that without hesitation at all. This is such an issue that I care about so much, and my coworkers are suffering every single day. And what I'm doing with this is helping to embody the suffering that they're going through without health insurance. But we have made actually a lot of progress. I announced on May 3rd that I was doing this. And since then, at that very night, the conversation at the board level shifted. Mm. And so we had two directors who had previously been silent. They came out and said they do support substitute teacher health care. We've had a third one yesterday who said that he also supports substitute teacher health care. I've got another board director, a fourth one, who is at this point drafting an amendment to the budget. Okay. Now, I haven't seen that amendment, and I haven't talked to that board director, so I don't know if I, you know, I'm not sure if that's a total victory or a partial victory or where that falls, and I have to have a conversation with them before we can come out and endorse something like that. But we've been making a lot of progress. We've gotten a lot of coverage on this, and I think that by the end of the budget process, which concludes on May 29th, that we will have a budget that includes health care for every full-time sub.
Well, he is Milwaukee Teacher Education Association proud substitute teacher member. His name is Alex Brower. He's on a hunger strike wanting and making sure that substitute teachers are treated fairly for health care and everything else and the hard work that they do. Alex, hey, stay safe, though, on this, and hopefully you can get a piece of that carrot cake before it gets stale.
Thank you. And for the listeners out there, too, make sure to follow us at Hunger Strike for Substitute Teacher Healthcare on Facebook, on Twitter. We are at Sub Hunger Strike.
There it is. Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, thanks. Have a good day.
From Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, teaching all children.
He is the executive director of the Children's Success Foundation and creator of the Nurtured Heart Approach. He is dedicated to awakening the greatness in all children, and especially the world's intense and challenging children. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Howard Glasser.
Thank you, Tim. It's an honor to be here.
So you're finally here. We've been talking about this for a year when I first met you at my training to become a Nurtured Heart trainer. And people ask me all the time, so what do you do with Nurtured Heart training? What does it mean? And so now to have the creator sitting right in front of me, I'll throw the question to you because I'm not very good at answering that question.
First of all, I'm honored to be the creator.
But somebody says Nurtured Heart Approach, what's your answer on the street?
Well, I have a different answer every time.
Okay.
So if you could accept that. Lately, I've been saying it's a truth-based approach.
Okay.
And one aspect of that I find true is that the very same intensity that drives people to be concerned, that drives adults crazy, is the exact same energy that's the source of a child's greatness. And we've been missing the boat. And in the we've been trying to make the intensity go away, medication. Mm-hmm. We've been trying to thwart the intensity in various manners through behavior management. We've been trying to channel the intensity into sports and dance and creative endeavors. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But what I'm trying to do is immerse that child into their own inner sense of greatness so that the greatness then has a life of their own. So, you know, we may still be as out of control as we were when a child was out of control, but we're out of control in a much more delightful way. We applaud instead of run for the hills.
Well, think about the way you frame this, because I know when people ask me, like, oh, this is another behavior management system. Mm-hmm. And just talking to you right away, you can understand that the idea of behavior management isn't necessarily at all what we're talking about. In fact, even the word intensity, I think, is purposefully used to take away and, in fact, say we can be intense in one way that drives you crazy.
Right.
However, that intensity is also the other side of a beautiful power.
Yeah. It's, to me, behavior management is more about containment.
Okay.
And not taking advantage of that power. So Nurtured Heart is more of an inspiration-based approach. We're inspiring others. And if we do it well enough, we inspire ourselves in the process. And if we do it really well, we inspire others to inspire others. You know, we get that kid to be inspirational. Mm-hmm. And they then have an impact on others. So it's different, you know, and can I comment on intensity for
a second? Absolutely, yeah.
you know, I'm fond of saying, Tim, what would it be like if you woke up tomorrow morning and your intensity went away? Would you miss it? Might it rain on your parade? Mm-hmm. Might it diminish your ability to live your dream? Might it diminish your ability to accomplish the things you care to accomplish on any given day? You might have trouble getting out of bed if your intensity went away. So the last thing we want to do is send the message to a child, something the heck is wrong with you because of your intensity. You can't handle it. Your parents can't handle it. Your mother can't handle it. Your father can't handle it. Your teacher can't handle it. We need to make it go away. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to medicate you or we're going to contain you. Okay. I think that's not the message I want to send to a child because then they grow up like I grew up, which is afraid of my intensity.
Yeah, and your own childhood is actually the motivator.
A testimony.
A testimony. I mean, you can describe yourself as an intense child.
Yeah, and I got the gift of immersing from childhood, hating the rules, having a dispassionate life, having an internal negative discourse, and acting out my negativity. It doesn't go away.
Mm.
It doesn't go away on its own.
Right.
And it perpetuates. So the way it perpetuates is we find negative relationships. We find negative endeavors. We get ourselves into turmoil. We go down rabbit holes.
So intensity, it just popped into my mind talking here, though, a positive intensity, it sounds like you asked me if I woke up without my intensity. I might hear that as if I woke up without my passion.
Bam.
Okay.
Without your life force.
Okay.
Yeah, passion's even better.
And so people can understand what we're talking about. And So, you know, yeah, we don't want to, when we talk about behavior management systems, particularly for teachers and principals and superintendents who might be listening to this, we're not talking about creating a management containment system of children. We like their passion.
Yes.
We like their intensity.
We want every ounce of it.
Okay.
And we want to translate it for them and for everybody into their loving being. We don't want to just say, be respectful to a child. We want to immerse them in the quality and say, here you are being respectful.
Okay.
In fact, here you are being incredibly respectful. The way you're asking questions shows your preparedness. It shows your level of caring about what you do. It shows your passion. It shows the depth of the respect you show yourself because you want to make your show wonderful and you want to bring out the best in this conversation.
And I did not pay Howard to say that, just so everybody listening understands. Okay, so passion, intensity. Give me something that says I'm listening. I'm now listening, Howie. You've got me. What should I do with an intense child in my second grade classroom? What do we do? I mean, what is, mm-hmm. you know, without to a part, but I mean, the nurtured heart approach, it sounds like, but I mean, I take in an intense second grader mm-hmm. and where do I start? How do I talk to, what am I looking at? How do I begin to even understand that there's a greatness there, as you say?
Yeah. So an answer it in two parts. Okay. One is, and I'll bring it, reel it in. Is kids watch the truth, truth-based approach. They watch the truth of their lives. And we adults care deeply about certain things like honesty, like responsibility, like cooperation, like respect. And when kids are being respectful, we lovingly say good job or thank you. And, you know, call that a mild mannered response
mm-hmm.
and a caring, approving response. But when kids are the absence of any of those, disrespectful, irresponsible, etc., we demonstrate to kids that we care more about that because we show up more. Even though we're busy, we're never too busy for a problem. So we take a nosedive, and the next thing we know, we're giving a little sermon or we're giving a little pep talk or a little lecture that basically says, Tim, you know, why can't you try harder? Why can't you be respectful? Which basically, you know, why can't you be respectful? Which basically sends an energetic message to a child. Apparently, you're not being respectful. Mm-hmm. So we accidentally show kids we love disrespect, because the way we do relationship, we think we're talking logically, reasonably, rationally, you know, straightforward.
Right.
And kids are reading the energy and then going, oh, I get more Tim. Tim, I'm more meaningful and valued by Tim when I'm doing the opposite of what he says he wants. And so number one is I want to counteract that by showing I'm no longer available for that. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to give the gift of me to that. Two, I very much want to change my lens and start looking for times when the child is indeed being responsible, but I'm not going to wait for big high watermarks of it. I'm going to purposely create versions of respect like I did a minute ago when I accused you of being respectful. And now you're respectfully listening.
Right.
It might be 500 ways of being respectful. You're respectfully responding. You're not just batting off unrelated questions. You're corresponding to the conversation. That's a great way of showing respect. So I'm going to immerse you in a way of saying, basically, I'm saying, here you are being respectful. It's not a question of you can or can't. And then if you are disrespectful, I'm going to have a marvelously simple way of saying reset, and I'm going to unplug me. Mm-hmm. You know, no soup for you.
Okay.
You know, no me for you.
Okay.
Momentarily, until now, moments later, however long, seconds later maybe, when you're not being disrespectful, then I go, thank you for resetting. Thank you for doing your consequence. Here you are being respectful again. Even though you're still mad at me, you're being respectful.
We are lucky to have with us the creator of the Nurtured Heart Approach, Howard Glasser. Howard, you gave us a nice description about how this maybe works in practice, and this idea that we're going to, you know, not energize bad behavior. We're going to make sure that a child gets us positively, in a sense, so that they can, so we can help inspire that. I know the biggest question that, if you're talking to particularly a school district, because I've worked with them a lot, is, okay, great, where's the research? Because schools aren't going to spend any money on an approach unless they can say research approved, mm-hmm, or research backed.
Well.
Okay. And I don't know, you know.
We've had a lot of informal research, mm-hmm, over the years, and actually an intern came along 2 years ago and collected all our informal research, and it tickled the fancy of the University of Arizona enough that they wanted to get involved in a formalized Nurtured Heart study.
Okay.
And together with a team of researchers, we devised a gold standard study to see the impact of Nurtured Heart Approach on ADHD. The study is now almost done.
Okay.
2 weeks from being done. And the beauty of the study was it looked at a cohort of 50 people who had eight kids with ADHD or strong symptoms of ADHD enough to qualify, and who were willing to go through a 6-week online parenting class, mm-hmm, that simply had a recorded segment, a written segment, a live segment, and a discussion forum. And there was a second cohort of 50 who were restrained from the intervention, mm-hmm, for 6 weeks. So they tested everybody before.
So it sounds very scientific,
yeah,
the way people went controlling,
yeah,
looking control, at the
variable. Gold standard.
Gold standard.
Gold standard.
All right.
So they tested everybody before, then they tested everybody after the first cohort went through it. They found that the second cohort made zero progress. Mm-hmm. Time alone doesn't heal anything.
Time.
And the first cohort, if you're ready for this,
I'm ready.
0.05 is considered
significance.
0.01 is highly significant. We came in at 0.001.
Really highly significant for the statisticians
significant
out there.
For those, yes. And on especially on the parameters that we were looking at, which is impulsivity and inattention.
Okay. That's
the two things educators care most about.
Right. Can't you just sit there and be quiet?
Yes.
And instead of reacting right away, like impulsive.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And impulsive could be anything, blurting things out or acting out.
And why aren't you listening to me?
Yes. Exactly. Inattention.
Inattention. So.
Yeah. So those two things alone are game changers. They affect what people consider to be the heart of ADHD and the heart of ADD.
Well,
now we're almost done with the second cohort. So if they didn't change from time alone, and it turns out when we test them all, not only at the end of in 2 weeks, but then 3 months later, and we find that the second cohort changed too, and maybe the first cohort changed even more because we taught them an approach that was self-propelling.
So in some of the earlier research, more anecdotal, but I mean, you look at this, you know, the suspension rates, particularly at Tolson Elementary School in Tucson, Arizona, suspension rates went down. Those are things that if I'm a principal, especially today, we keep hearing about, you know, we have disproportionately high suspension rates, particularly of certain
special
children.
Ed went from ordinary amounts of 16% to 1.2%.
Just special ed.
Yeah, utilization of special ed services went down to almost nothing.
What if somebody says, so how are what
teacher
you're...
Teacher attrition went down to almost nothing.
Okay, that's one right there. That I think at being, you know, the dean of a school of education where we are preparing future teachers and knowing the landscape currently out in the classroom and seeing, in one way, the positiveness of all the teachers finally saying enough, please respect me and respect what I do and give me what I need. But the other side, though, when you talk about retention, one of the issues when they talk about why they leave has to do with, you know, there's some systematic non-control of children that I'm not allowed to.
More intense children than ever before.
Okay.
And children at higher levels of intensity than ever before. Tenured teachers tell me that all the time. And we can't afford for teachers to be quitting the field. That's what happens. It used to be one out of three in the first 3 years, and now my understanding is it's at least one in two. And that must break your heart.
It's horrible. I mean, there's a lot of ways politically. It's very problematic for me because it creates a very cheap labor force that doesn't have much invested. But then, as you talk about this idea of, you know, when we have a 10-15 year teacher, there's a lot of knowledge and wisdom that's in that person. And when I hear them say, "I'm done," that is an indictment not of them to me. That's a system that's not paying attention to their needs. And a lot of those needs, what we're talking about is what you're saying is, so in some of these earlier studies, teachers having some training or approaches in the Nurtured Heart approach tend to stay in the classroom longer.
Well, Nurtured Heart was devised. It came out of my work with the most difficult kid. Well, I'll take that back. It came out of my work with the easy, difficult kids, the ADHD kids, at first for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I was kind of groomed through that, and it developed that way. But then I was given the gift of the oppositional kids and the throwaway kids and the gang kids and everybody, you know, stirring the pot. And I was inspired by them to make this approach stronger and stronger. So a lot of approaches that are used in schools are normal conventional approaches in disguise that could be energetically upside down, like I talked about before. Mm-hmm. And Nurtured Heart kind of came out of the, you know, the toil and trouble of making this as squeaky clean as it could be for those kids. It just surprised me as much as anybody else that it turned out to be a gift to the other kids as well.
Speaking of the ADHD kids, I'm sure you get this question, but I'm going to, you know, ask it because you make their statements about medication, non-medication, and advocacy for or against. And I mean, where do you see medication? Does it have a place with ADHD? Does it not? Are we, where are we with this?
Well, I think it's still considered best practice. Okay. I hope to have an impact on that. I certainly have a lot of great relationships with pediatricians and family docs and child psychiatrists who I'm not trying to put out of business. A lot of them will still do evaluations, and some of them have on their staff a nurtured heart person who they send for counseling. Well, let's rule this out first. And the majority of times, it can be ruled out. I like knowing that there's medication in reserve.
Okay.
I like knowing it's a backup. I certainly have no bone to pick with anybody, you know, on that level. I just think it snuck up on us and took over, and it just became a very simple, resourceful way for both professionals and for educators and parents to, you know, approach the situation and go, this is miserable. I want this to go away.
We need a fix. The parent, the teacher who's just saying, my goodness, I need something. And so the medication comes in.
And, you know, everybody knows secretly that, you know, even though there is some blessed relief, you know, when the medication tamps down the intensity, everybody knows the bottom line truth, which is, you know, the child wakes up in the morning and the problems are still there. They haven't gone away.
Right.
They, you know, there's been no healing. You know, when the medications wear off in the afternoon, it's back to square one. The problems are still there. So I think what people really want in their heart of hearts is healing. They want to see the same dang intensity, if I could use that word.
Sure.
The same dang intensity.
You can say damn if you want.
You say damn, I'll say dang. Okay. One, two, three.
Dang. Okay.
And we want to see the same intensity that was the source of the problems that's gone awry be the source of the child's greatness. And then we have other flames to fan. Then it's a whole new ball game.
Okay, I've just listened. I'm excited. Where do I go to get more information?
Children'sSuccessFoundation.com.
Children'sSuccessFoundation.com. Okay, that will be up on the Busted Pencils website.
It's the home of the Nurtured Heart approach. Mm-hmm. They are the guardians of this approach. And one thing I do these days is people who read about it, there are 15 books listed there that I wrote and many others that other people have written at this point.
If I'm going to buy a book for a gift for somebody, which book should I buy?
Transforming the Difficult Child.
Or
the Transforming the Intense Child workbook.
Okay.
I'd say either of those two. And then, you know, if you want to try this out on yourself, Igniting Greatness is a nice way to go.
Yeah.
And if you try this out, that would be what I would recommend. Try it out with some kids. See if you get some response. See if it lights a flame in you. If so, there are some online courses, and if you really like it and you want to decide this is a game changer, I want to teach this to others, come join us at one of our certification training intensives, which then entitles you and prepares you to train this work and coach it, too.
And I am one of those people now.
You are. And apparently I am, too.
Howard Glasser, Howie, thanks for busting pencils.
You bet. Let it be.
From Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, teaching all children.
She is a district-wide school counselor, behavior coach, and she is a most awesome, excellent, nurtured heart trainer. She's at the Verona Area School District in Wisconsin. Welcome back for people that haven't been listening or for that. This is actually your second time. Tammy Holton Arnold, welcome back to Busted Pencils.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be back.
Well, this is a great show because we got to interview the founder of this Nurtured Heart approach. And now the idea, though, that you, as a practitioner, in fact, in a school district, and have been a leader in helping a school district move this along. What do you think? I mean, how's it going? Do you see the shifts that Howie's talking about when you read this? How's it going?
Well, maybe a perspective that's just a little bit different than the perspective Howie shared is what I see in the staff that I'm working with who are taking this on. Mm-hmm. More than one staff member has told me that the Nurtured Heart approach is keeping them in the profession.
Okay.
That the amount of intensity, the intense behaviors were making it hard to come to work, and they were finding themselves anxious and depressed and challenged to the point where they were getting their resumes together. And the Nurtured Heart approach has given them the tools to be with those students in a way that is inspiring great behaviors, more academic success, and it's allowing them to be the teachers they always wanted to be, friendly, caring human beings who also are firm with their rules and have high expectations for kids.
Because because if I'm a classroom teacher, the first thing I want is I want a magic bullet, something that's going to stop the five kids that are doing five different things at once so that I can just teach on it or else I'm going on. And this is an approach, but it's also, though, when I interviewed Howie, it's also seeing behavior different, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's creating a climate.
Okay.
And it's committing yourself to that climate. And I just gave a workshop a couple of weeks ago where there were some experienced Nurtured Heart Approach practitioners taking the workshop again. And they said, what I'm realizing the most is it's so much about me. It's so much about resetting myself to what's going well in the classroom, to calling out what's great, to stopping myself from saying the things that my teacher said or my parents said, and committing myself to setting this new tone.
How are teachers then when you approach them, let's say a new teacher who's been, and I don't mean necessarily new classroom teacher, but someone who hasn't been exposed to the Nurtured Heart approach. I mean, the school district you're at is trying to take on a district-wide approach. How do new teachers receive this idea?
So just in my limited experience, mm-hmm. I find that it's fun working with the brand new teachers right out of college because they're so eager just to add any tools to their tool belt so that you don't have to, they don't really have much to unlearn. With staff who are more experienced and they've been around the block a time or two, they might sort of feel like, well, here's just another thing. I've tried it all. And so it might take a little more they might have a little more of unlearning to do, or it might take a little more persuasion. But the beauty of the experienced staff is because they already have so many tools in their tool belts that the minute they commit to this, they do it really well, really quickly.
So how about some of the veteran teachers, and I mean veteran of Nurtured Heart, because you've got some teachers in your school district that are, as we say, advanced.
Mm-hmm.
Any triple advanced or?
So advanced means they've been to the certified training intensive twice.
Twice.
Or more. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we do have people who've been more than two times.
Okay.
And I think as I've been coaching trainers over the years, what I find is in the third and fourth year that they're doing Nurtured Heart approach, or just teachers who are doing it really regularly, they start to talk about the humanity of it. Mm. That this is really just about how they want to interact with other people in the world. It's about relationships, and it's not about maintaining the kids' behavior. It's loving the kids for who they are, which they've grown to believe that loving them who they are within the three stands of the Nurtured Heart approach is what's going to help those kids to become even better versions of themselves.
But you said something that might be a little bit frightening for somebody listening. You said over the 3 to 4 years of working on this. So I'm not going to Nurtured Heart approach a YouTube video tonight and tomorrow morning transform my intense kids.
Yeah, that's right.
Aww.
There's no easy button. But it's a beautiful journey.
Okay.
A quicker turnaround is when I've coached teachers within the 3 to 4 month mark, mm-hmm. separately. But they'll have conversations with me about how they feel happier than they felt in years. Even having a period of maybe feeling a little euphoric, my unscientific reasoning for this is they're training themselves to look for the greatness of every moment and call it out. And when I coach teachers who are just starting, I say hundreds of times a day, you need to call out what's going well. So by the time someone's been calling out what's going well hundreds of times a day for 4 months, they're really starting to change the way they look at the world.
to do with the teacher when you say, because in this nurtured heart approach, I think that's really one of the keys is the noticing the goodness, the greatness and stuff like that. Does a teacher ever say, I'm tired of looking for greatness, Tammy. I just want them to stop being bad.
Yes. So I just worked with a teacher from a school, and she said she had this school year a very intense student. And he eventually left her classroom, but she said what she learned from him most was he sometimes just pushed her to the point where she would try to get firm with him or raise her voice. And every single time she did one of those things outside of the nurtured heart approach, he escalated enormously. So even though she wasn't making exactly the progress she wanted with the nurtured heart approach, going outside of it made things 10 times worse.
So she saw the fact that giving that energy, as we said, is going to give back energy,
yeah,
and it's not going to be the energy you want back.
Yeah. So, so she really used that as her way of keeping herself in check because he was very challenging.
Is there any one single, and this is a hard question, trick question, but a single teacher, single moment, single child, single observation that you've seen where you've went, now I know why I do the nurtured heart approach? Or are there many? Are there a few? Something that makes you go, man, I am so glad.
Yeah, I can think of one right now. Two kindergarten teachers who co-teach a kindergarten class went to the certified training intensive last summer, and they came back and instituted nurtured heart approach every minute of every day and in their classroom. And I met with them about a month into the school year, and a kindergartner stood up, and the teacher said, do you want to recognize anyone's greatness? And the kindergartner said, Peter, I want to recognize your greatness for sitting in your spot, which is probably a recognition he's heard his teachers give to the students many times. And then he stopped himself and he said, but I really want to recognize your greatness because I saw how Johnny was touching you and you could have hit him back and you didn't. And that shows what great self-control you have. And so the reason why that's my moment is that is how that child is interacting with the world in our school district. And it's going to make me misty, but from kindergarten.
Wow.
What is his future?
Yeah.
What is his social emotional learning? He's so well cared for already in kindergarten, and take that through K-12 in Verona Area School District.
Mm-hmm.
I feel really optimistic for him and every single kid in those two classes.
So, and that's kind of my last question there. The district, if I'm a district, I mean, how much work has it been implementing this at a district-wide level? And still trying to get there because you're not fully there,
no.
Right?
It's, yeah.
So that, you know, because again, I'm listening and I'm there and I'm like, our school needs this.
Yeah.
The reality of getting to the school level, though, I mean.
Yeah, I think like anything, I think it takes a combination of nurturing as well as accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the school where I just spoke about, there's a principal who's really committed to the accountability side. She's required every staff member needs to have nurtured heart approach training. She has staked the claim that this is the way we do business in our school. This is the way we interact with each other. This is the way we interact with kids. And this is the way we interact with families. And if that doesn't feel good, if that doesn't feel like it's a good fit for you, then her clarity is that maybe those people need to work somewhere else.
Hmm.
And so that's a level of accountability that not every school has yet. So then we can come in, but with that kind of clarity, we can come in and give our workshops, do coaching. We can have greatness groups, help people along. So that combination. So in other places, we're still doing the nurturing and there's not as much accountability. So we're getting as far as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Nurturing the hearts of the people who are interested, but you do need the accountability to get you the whole distance.
Well, Tammy Holton Arnold, thanks for nurturing my heart, and of course, busting pencils.
Let it be.
We are busting pencils.
On 1510 AM Resistance Radio.
Busted Pencils' own astrophysicist Ethan Siegel takes on that famous Alfie Cohn question, what are the schools our children deserve?
When you talk talk about what schools our children deserve, I can't help but think of the huge diversity of needs that children have, of the different levels they have, and of the different ambitions they have. What a child needs in school is something that will provide them with a safe environment where they can learn, where they can explore, and where they can be curious. What that means is individualized attention. It means a teacher that can pay attention to where a student is, can accurately assess where can we get this student to in the time that we have to work with them, and what steps can I take to help them get there for themselves. So what a successful education looks at, like what a school a child deserves looks like, is a school where the teachers are free to give the children an education to the best of their abilities, where individualized attention is a thing, where separate tracks are needed perhaps for the gifted students, for students who need remediation, for students who are special ed or special needs, that you can give the students the educational experience they need that's tailored to their level, to where they are now, and where the teacher gets to decide to the best of their abilities. Because when it comes to education, that teacher is the expert, not a parent, not an administrator, and certainly not a legislator. That's the schools our children need, a school that has safe and quality facilities, where the children have everything they need to prepare themselves to be in an environment where they can learn, and where teachers are empowered to do the best job they can do to the best of their ability.
And now our salute to famous historian and activist Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn.
If those in charge of our society, politicians, corporate executives, and owners of press and television, can dominate our ideas, they will be secure in their power. They will not need soldiers patrolling the streets. We will control ourselves.
My thanks to Alex Brower, Howard Glasser, Tammy Holton Arnold, and you. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Thanks for Busting Pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils Radio.